Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, an emotional finish to AEW Dynamite tonight, a tribute to the late Jay Briscoe. Mark Briscoe wrestling his first AEW match against Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal in tears coming out to the ring, barely holding it together before and really during the match and especially afterwards. Mark leaning on the middle rope after his victory over Jay Lethal and sending love to the fans for their support and a shout-out to his late brother. And then the locker room empties and everyone stands on the stage, wrestlers, producers, Tony Khan, the ROH, longtime wrestlers up front giving hugs to Mark, and Tony Khan gave Mark a hug too. Christopher Daniels, the first one to step out and give Mark a big hug. Just a real emotional finish to Dynamite. It still feels unreal what happened last week, but this I thought this was good. I'm not sure closure is the right word, but Tyler, just sort of a sense of celebrating the life and the career of Jay collectively for the fan base. And I'll throw in, and then I'll one more thing and I'll throw to you. And I thought Excalibur did a really good job relaying what Jay meant and what the Briscoes as a team meant to AEW fans who aren't familiar with their work, haven't watched them for 20 years in ROH. Your thoughts on that closing match, closing scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of similar thoughts. First of all, it was very nice, and I'm glad that it was allowed to happen. So that's first and foremost. But, yeah, I was thinking, you know, for myself as a longtime viewer of Ring of Honor, I mean, I had, you know, interacted with Jay personally a couple of times, so I was lucky enough to have that. So, you know, I'm well aware of him, his legacy in the wrestling business, et cetera. But, you know, a lot of people aren't, and I thought this was, you know, it is just, you know, whether the whole Ring of Honor thing has been good or bad, like this is one really positive thing that, you know, this bigger platform for Ring of Honor and those people within Ring of Honor. And now a wider audience gets to know about Jay Briscoe and his legacy. And people will now be curious, go back and, you know, hopefully go back on the library, see all his great matches and whatnot. But so, you know, it worked for me as someone who followed Jay for a long time and, you know, closure, you know, I think you would agree, not exactly what this was, as you said, but it feels like a nice goodbye, and then the closure happens slowly. So it was just nice. It's like that, you know, the memorial where it's not, you know, your grieving is not over for that family or for anyone that was a fan of his, et cetera. But it's a good place to know that there was a nice takeaway here. And, you know, he's not a one-for-one comparison, but, you know, Owen Hart was very young when he passed away too. And there's a special place of honor for someone like Owen Hart compared to maybe some of his other peers. And I think Jay Briscoe might end up being in that same category if there's a younger tag team right now that, you know, in 10 years, they'll say the Briscoes are their favorite, et cetera. It just made me think about all those sort of things and the legacy and the life and all that sort of stuff. So it was very nice. And I'm glad it was the main event. I wasn't sure it would be, but I don't see how it could not have been after watching it, but it's,
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know you can open with that or, I mean, I guess you could open with it and, you know, go to commercial, but it's hard to then go to family therapy. It's hard to, you know, go to MJF cutting a promo about a wrestling title. You know, I think they kind of had to do what they did and format it the way they did. And I think it was appropriate. And closing with everybody on the stage like that was a great scene. I mean, it was just, I just thought it was really well done. I don't really have a lot more to say about it because, I mean, what can be said? I mean, it's just, it was just visually conveyed what Jay meant to so many of those wrestlers and the fans and having, I mean, I was last week, I was like, will Mark ever wrestle again? And, you know, by, you know, various accounts, you know, he's doing well. You know, his faith is getting him through this. He thinks he'll see Jay someday. He's convinced he will. He doesn't think he's had his last interaction with his brother. I thought Excalibur, I think it was Excalibur. Actually, I can't remember which announcer it was. Maybe you do. Who talked about how, you know, Jay's legacy is going to live on through his daughters, and that's the silver lining in this. And yeah, I just thought it works. It works so. The planning and of it was appropriate for the situation. And yeah, I think it was special. I think it was a special moment for pro wrestling television.
Yeah, and I think also there, like you mentioned, Jay Lethal. You know, if you were just if you plopped into this, you have no idea the context. You knew this was like a memorial type match for somebody. You would have thought that it was Jay Lethal's, you know, brother. But I think that's actually, I took like a positive sign with that. Everything you said there about Mark, what he said about his faith and everything, it in a weird way made me feel better that Mark was out there and able to do this. And he was obviously emotional, but in his own way. And, you know, you believe that, you know, that he does think that he'll see him again, and you saw that in his actions, and that gave me personally a level of comfort that I wouldn't have known that, you know, if I would have said this to myself at 8 o'clock, I would be like, oh, that sounds kind of crazy. But it actually made me feel a little better as a person too, to see him out there. And, you know, I believe that he thinks that, and that gives me a lot of comfort. So that was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well put. Something you just said, I was going to reply to, and I can't recall now, which is fine. I know what it was. I was just going to say, we've got multiple people have reached out and said they were at the show tonight and they want to call in and talk about what it was like in the building. And yes, it'll be a typical on-site correspondent situation, but also I'm glad if everyone comes through that we'll get different perspectives on the emotions in that building tonight. And so we're expecting to hear from multiple listeners. We're big in Kentucky. We will hear from multiple listeners. We hope if all goes as planned as the show progresses. Let's just pause a little earlier than normal here and introduce the show formally, and then we'll come back and start taking calls and just talking about more of what I thought was a good episode of Dynamite. Tyler, short answer, do you agree?
I don't think
I'll
so.
I'll take that as a no. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good.
I think it was besides this, obviously, and I put this in my report.
Of course.
Yeah. But I thought it was just an okay episode. But
okay.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll change my mind.
Yeah. No, I didn't say great, but I thought it was a good episode. You know, I thought there were, well, we'll get into some of the specifics. It hit some boxes that sometimes they don't check, and maybe I'm over emphasizing those on my list because I'm like, yes, they did that. All right, so yes, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com and the host of various podcasts throughout the week. Yesterday, I recorded the Wade Keller podcast flagship edition with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, and that is our blue logo show. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app. And subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show, the post shows, and then also subscribe to our free podcast with the blue logo featuring not the post show call-in format, but just a more traditional, wide-ranging wrestling podcast format. And Jason and I talked about a lot of current events, mostly WWE and Royal Rumble Week and the Raw 30th anniversary and some Vince McMahon talk, but we also got some AEW talk in too during the show. So check that out if you haven't. And then I also recorded Everything with Rich and Wade, a PW Torch VIP podcast with Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Rich Fan. Yesterday also that went up for VIP members. And so I encourage you to go VIP to hear all our free shows with the ads and plugs removed, and also a bunch of VIP exclusive shows, including this Saturday night's Royal Rumble Roundtable post show. That'll be just for VIP members. That we've been doing that since 2003 or 4, you know, going on 20 years of doing pay-per-view roundtables for our members. And they're almost all available on demand when you go VIP. So if you want to catch up on our Royal Rumble roundtables over the years, we've got, I don't know, close to 20 of them. So lots of cool stuff in the archives. You get an ad-free website with full library and archive access when you go VIP. pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear, if it sounds familiar and you're a YouTube subscriber to our PW Torch channel, that's for good reason. It's Tyler Stage. He also covers Dynamite with his reports alongside mine on Wednesday nights at pwtorch.com. Tyler, good to have you here this week.
Good to be here as well. As someone said today on YouTube, I also sound like John Alba, who's a one of our peers in the industry. So I don't know if that's true, but there you go.
Very good. Tyler, just tell people a little bit about what we have going on the PW Torch YouTube channel.
Yeah, so we got a lot going on. We actually kicked open the Forbidden Door today, and I had Joel Pearl of Fightful on, and we discussed, we're doing a little home and home. We discussed the Women's Royal Rumble, and then tomorrow on their channel, I'll be discussing the Men's Royal Rumble. But we've got previews of all the major shows. So we've got Dynamite, NXT, Raw, and SmackDown. And then, so that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday around 5 p.m. Eastern time every day, so you can get a preview of what's going to come up on those major shows. And then on Thursday, Zach Hadorn and I have our show Fireside Chat, where we discuss all the biggest news topics of the week in all of pro wrestling. And we also do watch-alongs for pay-per-views and special videos for major events. As Wade, you joined me, I think, since the last time we talked here on a post-show during the whole more the Vince McMahon taking power again, as opposed to the false Saudi Arabia story. But a couple of busy news days there for a while. So thank you for joining me, and you helped break it down for the YouTube audience. But yeah, lots of content there. It's ever growing, and we appreciate you checking it out and then subscribing.
All right, excellent. We'd like to hear from you. If you watch tonight's Dynamite and have thoughts, give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show with us. And you can tell us what you liked or didn't like about the show, or just share some memories of the Briscoes, or react to the main event tonight. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We're going to do something a little different because we're expecting some on-site correspondents, and I want to have time to talk with them. I think they're taping Rampage tonight, Tyler. They're not doing a live Rampage, right?
Correct. They're taping it right now.
Yeah. So we'll hear from our on-site correspondents if they stick around for Rampage a little bit later, but we'll keep an eye out for hearing from them. So I want to actually go to fellow PW Torch contributor Javier Machado first after our introduction here, because I want to get his take on what we saw with the Briscoes and just the show in general. So we'll even play his jingle. Here we go. Javier, I hope you're not just like still like preparing for your appearance on the show an hour and 12 minutes from now. We're shocking you by bringing you on up front here.
Yeah. It's shocking. I was not ready, but that is fine. Cause, mostly I want to talk about Jay anyway, because that was
– We haven't talked.
Yeah, so, I mean – yeah, I know. It's been a bit – it's stuff going on. Ultimately, at the end of the night, it's between, you know, joining you on one of these things and sleep, and lately sleep has went up. But yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm getting old, Wade. I'm getting old. Sage, how's it going, bro? Always good talking to you, man.
Yeah, good. How are you?
Call him Machado.
Okay, last time I said Tyler, he's like, are you upset with me because he didn't call me Sage? Sage is a cool name. So I like calling him Sage. And no, Wade just like stirring stuff. That's just, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I was kind of like curious like last week, because I know that it was a WBD specifically. Because, you know, this is why I need to take notes. I was going to do Wrestle Kingdom, the second night of Wrestle Kingdom with Sean. I was still trying to get together to do a podcast on that. On Wrestle Kingdom in Yokohama, they actually did a really nice tribute to Jay Briscoe. And I'm like, this is, you know, this was simple, and it's something they could have done you know, at least that, because, you know, this is a person path. I'm glad that the otherwise Feck with Cowards at WBD reversed course and let them do this. I was happy they were able to play the image showing him as, you know, the important things that, you know, the most important thing, you know, not just the wrestling, but the fact, you know, the family man and his family and stuff like that. I thought it was very important. You know, Jay, I was surprised Jay was able to keep it together throughout the entire match. Jay Lethal, that is, you know, keep it together throughout the entire match. Cause, you know, he, like a few close ups, his eyes were like red, bloodshot red.
Yeah.
And it was, I thought it was a great, you know, a really nice, you know, thing. And I do think that like fans really needed, you know, a level of closure on that first, you know, or like, you know, on that first night. Do want to talk about real quick what New Japan did, because New Japan was having their Wrestle Kingdom, the second night of the Wrestle Kingdom event, which was mainly, it was really a New Japan versus Noah pay-per-view. And the wrestlers, after they did their preliminary, you know, opening matches, when the show actually opened up proper, the wrestlers from both Noah and New Japan came out to pay tribute. Mara Fuji leading the Noah group, who they said on commentary that he had, you know, that he was close with Jay, and Tanahashi leading the New Japan group. They came into the ring and they presented the, you know, they were carrying photographs of Jay. Mara Fuji had one of Jay when he was much younger, and Tanahashi one when he was most recent. They did an announcement for Jay. They did the 10 bell salute. They did an announcement for Jay, and then they played the wrestlers out with the Briscoe song. So I thought that was very, you know, very nice. And the other thing I thought that was kind of cool was, in keeping with keeping kayfabe, the heels were actually like, particularly the Bullet Club, they were actually out in the, you know, in the rafters. So they weren't mingling with, you know, the baby faces, but they were still there to show respect. You know, so I thought that was a neat little thing. So overall, I thought that was really cool, and I'm really glad that, you know, AEW was able to do the same thing.
That is super cool. the old school fan in me enjoys that attention to detail. I appreciate you sharing that. That's good stuff. Javier, what else about the Mark Briscoe tribute? Anything else jump out, especially that was like, oh, they could have easily not done that or not said that, or is there? I mean, I'm not looking to critique this. That's not, you know, this is not the type of thing you're critiquing. In fact, it's good enough that it doesn't cross our mind. I mean, it could have been done horribly. I mean, I guess then we'd critique it, but this is just, it was way beyond, you know, beyond just, you know, acceptable. It was really a beautiful moment. In fact, Sean Radican, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, who's covered ROH for PW Torch nearly from the beginning. So that was a beautiful tribute to Jay Briscoe by AEW, the match between Mark and Jay, the Jay Lethal, and then the locker room coming out, giving them a standing ovation after, was beautiful. What a scene with Mark and Jay walking into a standing ovation. Amazing. I think that encapsulates it well. But, yeah, any other thoughts on that in particular, Javier?
Well, I do need to go back and watch it again, because I was actually on the phone with my brother, because it was his drive home from work. You know, so I didn't hear the commentary. I know that Rukabani and Coleman were on the on the call, and I did want to hear what they had to say, because, you know, obviously the whole ROH thing there. So I do want to go back and listen to what they said. But no, I thought it was very it was gracious. It was very nice. It was, you know, like I said. Because I remarked to my brother, because that it's a happy coincidence that their song starts with Reach for the Sky, you know, because it clicked when somebody had the sign there.
Yep.
And he said, you know, and I'm like, oh man, that's just, you know, really cool. So so yeah, I mean, I'm glad, you know these come out that you know, they're in otherwise, you know, as high spirits as you could be with the situation. Family being that is. So, you know, so I thought it was very well, very nice tribute. And, and talking to my brother, he just said, oh, yeah, I got to buy a T-shirt. So I got to buy a T-shirt, too.
Yeah.
So, so I thought that was great. The only criticism I really have for the show, I mean, there's stuff in there, but we got to talk about – Hangman Page. because I don't get his character at this point at all. Because I mean, I want to try to find like something, a direction, anything.
Yeah.
And it was just so weird. So yeah, I just want to get your guys' take on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they decided to do a rubber match next week with Hangman and Moxley, and Hangman talked about him last week. He talked about him again this week, and yeah, I mean, he seems like he's obsessed with getting knocked out, or Moxley making light of him getting knocked out. And I think, you know, most people think, hey, people get knocked out in a business where you punch people and elbow people and throw them headfirst into things, and you know, get over it. I mean, I wouldn't still be leaning on this hard. I will say, on a positive note, Wheeler Yuta came in and talked like a grown up, and I thought it was good on the microphone here to set up a challenge for against Hangman on Rampage. But yeah, I mean, I didn't have strong feelings either way, other than kind of in a general sense, I'd like Hangman to use his considerable high end mic talent and overall likability sooner than later in a feud against a heel. I don't want to see a reunion with the Elite. I don't want to see that storyline, and I don't need to see him still. I mean, he's starting to seem like CM Punk did about that little throwaway line from Hangman earlier this summer that was still, you know, 3 months later driving Punk nuts. And now Hangman, it's almost like they're doing an unintentional spoof of that. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, the segment itself, you kind of laid out, like, at least it was not, you know, the Dark Order were not present. I thought that's always a huge win with any sort of Hangman presentation at this point. And no allusions to getting back together with the Elite at this point, because I think that story is not warranted for the general audience. It's warranted for about 100,000, maybe 200,000 people that watch that know that backstory. But, you know, if they want to do that on BTE, that seems fine, but it doesn't feel earned from a normal viewer perspective, and it doesn't feel like it's going to hit very hard in that capacity. So him, you know, it's not the greatest story in a vacuum, but him not being, you know, the, you know, emo, anxious millennial cowboy, which, you know, some people like and some people don't like, and I'm kind of in the middle on that, but him just kind of saying, yeah, I got hit and I want to knock him out like he knocked me out, like, in a vacuum, I like that. There are lots of other things, as you laid out, Wade, that I would tend to agree with. But it's better for Hangman Page promo. I graded on a scale, and I thought it was, for a segment, I think it's good for his character to go in this direction as opposed to what he's been doing the last, you know, ever since the title run. So a little more generous by me, but I thought it was fine. And I thought this would be a pay-per-view match between the two of them. So I wonder what happens, and if we get like a last man standing sort of situation. But we'll see. I'm mildly intrigued by what's going on there, but yeah, so it was okay.
Yeah. Javier, go ahead with either more of that or something else.
Well, cause what I'm confused with is like the impression I got last week was the fact that he was, concerned that, you know, with Moxley's health, unlike he was, you know, unlike Moxley was with him. So it kind of felt like he wasn't going to, you know, do the same thing that Moxley did. And, you know, because he asked, you know, is he doing well? And, you know, Renee replied in that, you know, we don't know we're recording you kind of thing that they did. So he looked like he was actually, you know, legit concerned. But then, you know, this week it's like, oh, well, I can't wait to knock him out in Ohio. I think that's where they are next week, right? I can't wait to knock him out there. And I'm like, that doesn't necessarily, like, jive, you know, because, like, I'm fine with him asking for a rubber match with, like, okay, the first one had this happen, the second had this happen. Let's just have one more match and just, you know, see who's truly better kind of thing. You know, I could have understand that, but this, like, I can't wait to knock you out. Maybe if the match had already been announced, but it seemed like this was a way to announce the match. I don't know, that whole segment, it feels like all jumbled up. I'm, you know, and which is why I'm having a hard time trying to understand what he's going for. Cause like, I mean, he came across dickish to me with this thing saying, okay, I can't wait to knock him out like near his hometown. Or I think that was, he was living.
Yeah. I said, I'm ready for us to move on, but you know what? It's going to be a hell of a match. I mean, that's the bright side. You know, I mean, I know sometimes, you know, we just sort of take for granted AEW is about really good matches, and we just stipulate to that and then go on to critique all the stuff wrapped around it that where we think they can improve or things that where they really shined. But, you know, I'm expecting a special match between them next week. So that's the good part. I hope there's some sort of, like, they fight it out, and then they get to a point where instead of fans having to choose between them, they kind of get it out of their system, and it ends on a positive note between them, and they can just move on without tension. You know, it's sort of a fictional version of what some fans want to see happen with the Bucks and Punk. Any thoughts on that, Javier, or anything else you want to bring up?
Well, no, yeah. So the other thing I want to talk about, since we talked about it last time I co-hosted on AEW with you, do you think that the Daniel Bryan, he's more on the track that he should be, you know, considering the fact that he's heading towards the to the thing? So, because that was the concern that we had. I mean, I was pretty sure that he'd eventually turn into gear. I think is this like him turning into gear?
Yeah, this is one of the things I liked about the show, is we had Daniel Bryan getting fired up. I'll just say this as a preface before I say a lot of positive things. I'm not a fan of babyfaces treating people who have their best interests in mind like shit. And Danielson was so disrespectful and mean to that poor trainer. And I want to root for Danielson, but it's like he's there doing his job, looking out for your best interest. I know some people will be like, you know, athletes get worked up and, you know, trainers are overcautious or whatever. But no, just like I don't like when they disrespect like interviewers and act like they're subhuman. And I just think it's a bad look. So just as a general philosophy, I'd rather have Danielson, and I think this is what he's like in real life, go, I, with all due respect to your professional opinion, I don't want to hear it, you know, and be a little more civil in that, and then turn his rage to MJF. So with that said, I love seeing him rage about both MJF and wanting the championship. And I thought and MJF's promo was like a highlight of the show. Danielson made that AEW title seem important to him in a way that he hadn't before, and also gave fans that incentive to not only want to see Danielson win, so Danielson can be champion, but also take it from MJF. And that's what pro wrestling's about. It's not about, you know, this is awesome chance. That's great when matches are good enough to elicit that. But it's about fighting over something of value where you're rooting for someone to beat someone else who you want to see suffer defeat. And I thought that Danielson tapped into that. I like the cage match a lot. And I like that they follow through on the storyline of, you know, is he going to be too hurt to wrestle MJF? And that, you know, certainly will probably be a storyline in the match where MJF's working over his shoulder. And then to bring in Timothy Thatcher as a follow-up to Brian Cage, they had the announcers noted Cage isn't a submission specialist. He's going to, you know, brutalize his arm, but it's not a specialty to try to, you know, twist or tear it off. And it was like foreshadowing or laying the groundwork for, oh, we got someone who completes the Brian Cage attack in a completely different way with, you know, the ground attack and the submission specialist that he is, and comparing him to Billy Robinson, who I was fortunate enough to be able to see in person at the tail end of his career, is an apt comparison. And they gave you video footage of him and built him up, I thought, effectively. And it's another box that they checked here, where there wasn't that sense, if you watch the show through the lens of a casual fan, you might think, oh, they're not going to know who Thatcher is, you know, because for most of Thatcher's run in NXT, AEW was on opposite of NXT. And people presumably watching AEW were not watching NXT at that time. And so now, you know, people have an idea of who he is. And, you know, Thatcher just sells himself. I mean, he's a still photo of him sells himself. Him walking the aisle sells himself, especially him taking great joy and dismantling somebody on the mat further sells it. So that's one of the things I liked about the show is I haven't even gotten to MJF's promo, but the path with Danielson makes more sense, and he's not fighting baby faces who fans like, and they're rooting for the face to end Brian's dream of winning a world title. Like, you know, you could argue that happened the last couple of weeks. This was more logical. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's probably the difference on why I thought it was a little lower on the show than you. And I agree with every point you're making. I just, you know, in the totality of this feud, I would have much preferred this be like a starting point or the second chapter, as opposed to what we had the last, you know, few weeks in the classic MJF buildup where you have to go through a gauntlet. And, you know, the Thatcher stuff is like that, but it's, they've pivoted on the feud enough to make it feel a little more unique than they have in the past. It doesn't feel like a cookie cutter paint by numbers MJF feud at this point, which I give them, you know, AEW credit for doing. But, you know, it just feels like we've pivoted, but I got to look at the feud in totality. And, you know, it was, I was probably a little less on the Bryan Danielson aspect of it. It felt just a little contrived to me. I know it's wrestling, so don't come at me. It's all contrived, but, I don't
know.
Don't
apologize. Yeah. There's some things that feel believable and resonate
yeah.
as authentic and other things don't. So, I mean, the goal in wrestling
just
is,
felt,
you know, seem authentic. Good. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. It just felt like maybe that was a, on the same episode. I don't know. I think it could have felt better maybe on a Rampage even to give it some time to breathe. But I did like the MJF segment a lot. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But it was the first time seeing this version of Danielson. And maybe it was just abrupt to me that it maybe didn't feel as earned as I think it should have, because he's gotten beaten down and gone to war every other time. And you know, Brian Cage and MJF teaming up didn't feel any different than the other times to get him to this point. So I guess him being activated in this way, you know, if it would have started here, I'd be much higher on it. But, you know, we're here now, and I think going forward, the feud looks to be more successful than I thought it was going to be. So so that works. But, you know, it was not the best part of the show, but it was fine and got this feud on track. So, you know, I'm a thumbs in the middle if you were to ask me.
Javier, you can expand on that if you'd like.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned about the him and the trainer. It was funny because my thought when the trainer said, you know, when he asked him, can I wrestle? And the trainer's like, well, you know, we talk, you know, this is going on. Giving his history with, you know, not, you know, how many years. And this is from, I'm saying from his point of view. I'm not saying I disagree 100% with him. But, you know, the number of years that he lost. Because, you know, the doctors wouldn't clear him. So that's why I saw him. You know, it did seem like an overreaction, but it felt like an earned overreaction considering the fact that, you know, you're not going to take this away from me. You know, no more doctors can tell me I can't wrestle. So it kind of felt like something
that
like that. Yeah, so that's why it didn't really strike me like you, because for like, if there is one person he's gonna, you know, not have a cordial relationship, it's the guy that's gonna tell me you can't wrestle.
That's an essential valuable point to make to this, because yeah, there is baggage with Danielson when it comes to trainers, but it's still, you know, you don't want to get mad at the rental car clerk for something that a different rental car clerk did a week ago in a different city.
So yeah, I mean that you know, I could talk about the entire show, but I'll leave some stuff for other people. So I will be downloading and listening tomorrow morning on my drive home to work. Oh my God, I'm so tired. Could you imagine how bad
I'm glad
it were an hour later?
I'm glad we got you in early, Javier. It would have been a disaster. It just would have been a disaster, Javier.
I mean, it probably make for good audio or horrible audio, one of the two, but, you know.
Yep. Cool.
All right,
thanks,
guys.
Javier. We'll certainly talk to you soon.
Yep.
You too. All right, we have another special guest. I read his tweet just a few minutes ago. Longtime Pro Wrestling Torch contributor, Sean Radican, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist. Podcaster on the VIP side of things mostly. And Rashawn, I read your tweet a few minutes ago about the Jay Briscoe tribute. I wanted to bring you on the show. I think this is a you know, special episode of Dynamite because of that show closing angle. And you, maybe this isn't true, but have you seen every televised and pay-per-view Briscoe match that there has been? And welcome, Sean. Sorry. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, probably just about.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of, you know, Briscoe matches over the years between the TV pay-per-view and DVDs and VHSs and the early days.
VHSs. Totally. So elaborate, Sean, on what you thought of the tribute, first of all, and how they handled that.
I thought it was great. They had, you know, that video in the middle of the show to set it up. That was I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but it was done by an old ROH producer who's with AEW now, and he did an awesome job with that. And then I thought it was great. They, you know, Jay Briscoe and Jay Lethal had that feud together in Ring of Honor. And I thought they did a great job of bringing, you know, calling back to those matches between Jay and Jay, I guess, so to speak. And it just, and all that, but I just thought it was great that, you know, just, you could just see the two of them, Mark and Jay Lethal, and how emotional they were going into it, and then they just got down to it, and I just had so many emotions watching it, because, you know, the first time seeing Mark on, you know, cable to this, you know, a cable station like this, to this level, you know, this audience, and what it took to get him there finally just dawned on me. And just the, you know, hearing that the crowd was into it and they all knew the, you know, they knew what was going on and what was, you know, at stake and what it meant and how influential the Briscoes had been over the years, despite never getting on, you know, making it to a big national promotion together, was astounding. And it was just it was a beautiful tribute, especially the end where they both separately walked up into the standing ovation from the locker room with Jay's graphic behind everything and so many ROH wrestlers and, you know, former agents and office, you know, from the old ROH era up on the stage with them. It's nice to see so many of their contemporaries there that were able to be there live for that, that, you know, that so many people from Ring of Honor are now in AEW and got to see that.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Rashawn, talk a little bit more about what Excalibur said about the influence of the Briscoes. Was there any historical inaccuracy or exaggeration? And is there anything you want to add to that and put context into them?
No, just, you know, under the radar for so long, they've influenced so many wrestlers and tag teams, and they've taken it to, you know, to WWE and AEW, and the Briscoes have stayed behind, and they fought, you know, generations and generations of, you know, crops of wrestlers that were grouped together and went on to WWE together. They worked with them and influenced them, and tag teams that went to even, you know, Impact and beyond, or, you know, on a higher level in some ways at times. You know, they influenced all of those teams, and it was great to, it's just amazing to hear. It just dawns on you, just, you know, their style, their, you know, it was hard to, you know, go, you know, cut your teeth as a wrestler and not be influenced by the Briscoes and what they did over the last 20 years, and especially, you know, starting in the 2000s, and, you know, so many guys grew up watching them and were fans of Ring of Honor and ended up working with them and going to AEW and going to WWE, and their matches are just so influential. It's just, it really is amazing to think of, you know, the way they just defined tag team wrestling for two decades, you know, and they went out doing their very best work, you know, 20 plus years after they started, you know. It's just, it's incredible. That double dog collar match with FTR in December was just unbelievable, you know, and you can't find enough good things to describe it. And, you look it up, they probably did it when it comes to tag team wrestling, when it comes to how influential they are. And you know, just
tell me a couple things specifically that they did that either, you know, advanced the style or was state-of-the-art. You know, like people talk about Ric Flair in that so many wrestlers' best match of their career was with Ric Flair, and that's one of the things that makes him great. I think to a degree, you know, a lot of people passed through ROH and fought the Briscoes. Is that also relatively true with them?
I would say it wasn't always true, but it was, you know what I mean? They fought so many teams, but a lot of them, you know, Bodice Machine Guns, the Kings of Wrestling, Steen and Jinder, you know what I mean? It was just their style meshed with everyone because they were tough, believable, you know, brawlers, but they could also move, you know what I mean, move around enough so if they're working with a fast-paced team, they're right there with them. And you're like, you know what I mean? Like where if you watch any number of teams, they don't necessarily show that. You know, that toughness, that believability that some people think teams are lacking, you know, you couldn't say that about the Briscoes. You couldn't say they weren't believably tough, even though they're in there with guys moving, you know, flying around a million miles an hour, because they could fly around a million miles an hour, and they looked like they were kicking your butt, you know? Just the brawling, yeah, and the believability, the tough guys setting them apart. I mean, they played their characters, you know?
yes. Oh, Sean,
through and through. Like, and you know, it's one of the reasons why I just never really connected with them, you know what I mean? in some ways.
I want to have Tyler's question, and Sean, I'm going to have Tyler's question in a second, but I want to ask a follow-up, and that is, what do you think of explain the difference between Mark and Jay? You know, because there's, again, I think a lot of people are they've heard of the Briscoes, but if, you know, not everybody who watches AEW or WWE had time or decided to watch Jay.
Jay's the one you don't. Jay's the one you really don't want to mess with. You know.
There we go. Yeah. So explain
Jay,
the on-air the evolution of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay's the older brother. He's the tough guy. He doesn't mess around. He doesn't joke around. Mark, on the other hand, at first, you know, he was kind of not the weak link, but, like, you know, he was always the younger brother. Then he was, like, it would be the joking around. They kind of polished that off in the end. But, you know, Mark is just crazy in a funny way, you know. And it was a great mix because you had Jay, who was just serious and just legit scary the way he looked. I mean, when he was champion of Ring of Honor, you know what I mean, just changed his look. Dreads and stuff like that, just look big beards, just looking, yep, legitimately crazy. And Mark, on the other hand, was always doing like the, you know, the redneck kung fu, and, you know, he'd do a move off the top and he'd go woo woo, like, you know, just you know, he was always the lighter hearted brother. But yep, man, when it got down, yep, to it, you know, Gabe would be like, come on, Mark, you know, and then they both be in full, you know, the two of them would be in full butt-kicking mode.
Todd Martin mentioned on the Fix, the VIP podcast, The Fix, last week, that Jay Briscoe could have been, if things had gone just differently, a top-tier main event single star in WWE for, you know, all these years. Do you agree with that, Sean?
I have a hard time believing they'd push someone with that, like that, with Vince
in
charge.
Well, that's not the point. That, I would say, let's set that aside. Like, if there wasn't a hang-up or a decision that he didn't fit in, I'm not saying, like, it was likely, given what Vince did, but if Vince were amenable to it and dropped him into the WWE environment, because of what you just described about Jay, I think he – I mean, I thought this. Like, I think he could have been an iconic star of his generation.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been, you know, a money-drawing heel or a tough baby face. Either way, he was just so believable as a champion, especially when he was champion. Just this, you know, legitimate tough guy, great singles wrestler. Like, just it was amazing, like, to be so good at both, you know, singles and tag. I thought, yeah, I would agree with that, that he could have definitely been just his look, his talking was incredible. You know, the promos they cut together,
mm-hmm,
not only together, but Jay by himself, they'd basically just, they cut their own promos and send them into ROH a lot of the time before they got to the, or even when they did get there, but, you know, when they weren't produced, they'd make their own promos, you know, one or two takes, send them in. They were just, the two of them just, you know, just, you know, Jay would get this crazy look in his eyes, and you'd be like, oh, my God, this guy's, you know, this guy's crazy, and the Briscoes are going to do awful things to their opponents, or Jay's going to, you know, there's no way Jay's losing his title to this guy because it's like that believability. It would have carried over to TV, no doubt. If he had gotten the chance,
Sean, can Mark be? And I don't know the status of him working more in AEW, his desire, you know, because Tony Khan has an RH brand that he wants to promote. But is Mark someone that can be a centerpiece, act as a single star in ROH? Do you think he's more likely to find a different tag partner, or would that be difficult for that partner in a lot of ways? Or do you think AEW could utilize him, and where would he fit in AEW?
I've just never seen him do well as a singles act other than when he was wrestling his brother. You know what I mean? He's
mm-hmm.
really good in tag team situations. So I think, maybe he could be. Maybe, you know, this carrying on Jay with him could be something that gives him that missing piece, because he was, mm-hmm. you know, he's just on his own. He's just... he's got this comedy side to him, but he's believably tough
right.
too. But I think he could be, but not to the, you know, I think he could be a top singles guy, but it would take a lot of reinventing on his part, you know, because he's been such he's so good at the tag side. I think he could be a singles player at times, but I think him finding a new partner would be the best path for him, because he's just never shown that he's, you know what I mean?
Totally.
He's special as a tag team wrestler, but he's not like that's just not him, you know, it's just not in his personality like Jay had to be this like complete psycho when you as a singles act. You know,
yeah.
He just doesn't come. He could be, think he's as a, go ahead.
Yeah. Let me throw to Tyler. Tyler, is there anything you want to add to the conversation Sean and I have just had?
Yeah. I mean, a good amount actually, but you know,
yeah.
on the legacy thing, I just want to make sure, you know, I've been thinking about what you guys have been talking, and I think really the key difference in why the Briscoes, I think, are going to go down as a legendary tag team and why they deserve to be is with the era that they came up in, they were able to thread that needle so well of that, you know, the indie scene and that ECW type guy, you know, the what we still see today, those deathmatch wrestlers, et cetera. Like, if they had come up 10 years earlier, they might have been, you know, Pitbull 3 and 4 in ECW, right? And that probably would not fully get the best out of them, but they were able to blend that style, the brawling style that Sean's talking about, and be chameleons basically with whoever they were in the ring, right? I mean, they go from, you know, your Jim Cornette type of like of wrestling all the way through to people that like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and all that sort of stuff. Like, they have matches that work for everybody, and they're able to basically match whatever style their opponents have and get the best out of their opponents, which is, you know, I think something we see now, we see that with Bryan Danielson a lot as an example. We saw that tonight, and he got the best out of Brian Cage, but the Briscoes have been doing it for 20 years, and they're that first tag team to really specialize in, you know, putting their opponents first almost from a physicality standpoint, but just being a reference point for, if you want to be a good tag team wrestler, watch what these guys do. And, you know, just a lot, you know, I brought up Owen Hart earlier, and I think the Harts are similar in that way, and their legacy only ages like wine, right, on how they're appreciated. So that's kind of my take on that. And then on Mark, I'll talk about that briefly too, but I think him as a tag works best, as Sean said. I don't think he's going to change his character a ton, Justin. I think that's probably for the best. But, you know, if there's like a legacy Ring of Honor person that can tag with him, you know, once Jay Lethal's done with Jeff Jarrett, what they're doing, like them tagging together makes a lot of sense, or just any sort of legacy ROH person where they can hold that legacy and have great matches. I think that would work really well and keep that Briscoe thing. And, you know, who knows? There's lots of young Briscoes. I know Jay's son is, I think, a teenager. So who knows if he takes up the mantle, but that'd be pretty cool if Jay's son would get into wrestling, and him and Mark in his 40s could be a tag team. You know, I don't know if that's what he wants to do, but I know that I would think that would be pretty cool. But I also do have a question for Sean, and that is really like not the ROH AEW stuff, but, you know, the long history of Ring of Honor. Once Ring of Honor, you know, if people have the Honor Club and can go through the library easily. Is there any sort of particular, you know, ladder war match or any tag team that they should search, you know, the ultimate Briscoes versus et cetera, and in what era? Just, you know, Sean, maybe pick two or three matches, one match, two matches, whatever, that people should go out of their way to see the Briscoes have with another team during their Ring of Honor run.
Man, that's so tough.
I know. That's why I thought you'd pick, you know, even if it's like every Steen Generico ladder war, every Young Bucks ladder war, you know, whatever you got to do. But there's so many good ones.
Yeah.
I think it's a positive, obviously.
The early stuff against Redden Styles. Was it Redden Styles? I'm trying to remember now off the top of the...
Yeah, I think so.
That was amazing. Just the early, even just watching their, they were feuding with, they would be feuding with teams, and if they messed up, they would end up, they would do this story where they wrestled each other, and it's always a blast to watch them when they wrestle each other during that 2000s period. It didn't happen many times. There was one time after the motorcycle, this isn't a tag match, but I do want to draw attention to it because it was part of them toughening each other up to go on to face their opponents. They faced each other at a show, I believe, in England. And it was just pure craziness. They hadn't been doing that, you know, they're trying to get back in the title picture. And I think it was like 2007. So looking up those matches on Honor Club is going to be worth it. Just Mark versus Jay. But, you know, anything, Young Bucks, Motor City, Gen Next. Definitely the Steen Generico stuff, American Wolves, Eddie Edwards, and Dave, they had crazy matches with those guys. Trying to think. The Kingdom, like, they had some of their best matches against the Kingdom at the show at, was it like one of the first shows of 2016? Or, you know, early 2016, they faced the Kingdom in this crazy match. Look up their, it was a DVD show, though, so... Just look up the Kingdom versus the Briscoes. They had some of their best matches against the Kingdom, actually, of their career. That last one at Final Battle 21 before Ring of Honor shut down was amazing. But, look up the Briscoes Ladder War. Look up the Age of... is that where the Age of the Fall came in after, I believe?
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember if that's where it started, but look up their matches against Tyler Black, Age of the Fall matches, Black and Jimmy Jacobs. There's so many, but the top is going to be the Kings of the Kingdom, the Kings of Wrestling, Steen and Generico. That's what I'd recommend.
Yeah. I mean, really anyone that, as we've said already, that's not named Roman Reigns, basically that's a big star in pro wrestling has interacted with them. There's one degree of separation basically with everybody that's, you know, a male wrestler, from the Briscoes, which I think is even more of a legacy defining, situation that they've interacted with everybody. And, you know, people today that only watch cable wrestling have just seen Mark for the first time and never saw Jay wrestle is quite something, I would say. A very rare situation, unfortunately.
Sean, I appreciate you calling in and sharing some of your insights and memories and thoughts on tonight's tribute on the Briscoes. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Thank you.
Yep, you bet. So Sean's a little under the weather, so I'm glad he was able to join us, had the energy to do so. All right, our phone number, we had some people drop off, so if you are interested in now shifting, because we're going to pivot to Dynamite, give us a call, 347-215-8558. As noted, we're anticipating hearing from some people who are in the building tonight. I think Rampage is probably wrapping up around now, so we might start to hear from them. I've got my eye out for notes from them. But in the meantime, I actually do want to, I just got a note that Rampage is running behind. So I don't know what that means other than they're not done with it yet. All right, so I want to shift, and this is going to be a sharp shift in topic, to JB from Detroit. Don't call me crazy, but I actually somewhat enjoyed the acclaimed Guns Family Therapy tonight. It had a much more serious tone than I was expecting and did good work in moving the storyline forward. It wasn't a wasted fluff segment as the therapy storylines generally are. I just think it's sad that there are, quote, generally, that there are enough therapy storylines that we have the plural of how they generally are. I do think that the path is for Billy to rejoin his real sons in pursuit of their dream, but that's a tough corner to book yourself into or to book yourself in. You don't want to waste the big moment of the Billy turn, as he's been a big part of the Acclaim's act and have the Guns lose, but the Acclaimed are still very much hot and over. As always, love the show, and everyone go VIP. So, Tyler, I'm kind of with JB on this. I was anticipating either talking myself into, you know, accepting and liking some zany humor, some slapstick, and hoping it was a good version of that. And they did something more serious, and it was short. It's still pro wrestling. You know, I mean, it's not the most realistic family therapy session. Very brief. You know, that's a lot of people who don't or are scared of going to family therapy might go to that because it was like, you know, 2-3 minutes and then they're in and out. But yeah, I'm curious for your thoughts.
Yeah, actually, I did not dislike the seriousness that they were trying to strike there with the setting. The problem I had and why I didn't think it worked at all was a more philosophical reason, and that was that the Acclaimed look like the most, you know, evil heels, not evil, but just like, you know, not the types of baby faces that I want to see and that the Acclaimed do right there. Basically, the rebuttal to the Guns saying that they stole their dad, it was that they, you know, they suck and they're a-holes. And there really no real comeback that, you know, as a viewer of the product, I've been, you know, basically watching that, I was like, oh man, are the Acclaimed the bad guys in this situation? And I don't know if that was the core they were going for, but it certainly is what struck me. And I just don't like, it felt a little bit, not current WWE, but for a while there were baby faces in WWE that were either, you know, very stupid from the way they were booked, or they were pretty conniving and doing whatever it took for them to win. And that was, for some reason, made them a baby face. And that's how I felt here. And, you know, Billy Gunn felt neutral, and the Guns, you know, it depended, right? Like the Guns then transitioning after that serious thing and say like, well, you know, if we get these tag titles, that'll make us happy and we don't need your love dad or whatever. That also didn't strike very well for me with the serious tone they were going for. But the Acclaim looking like they didn't get the notes of this promo is kind of the vibe I got, that they thought they were going to be here to have fun and scissor, and they it got turned on them and they had no rebuttal. I just didn't think made them look very good in a couple of ways.
I have to say, as much as I was sort of relieved, I need to see more of where this is going. And I think the concern of Billy rejoining his sons and how this affects the Acclaimed, and frankly, just sort of the, I know that they get along and in, you know, real life, and they, there's like those five have a bond, but I am kind of eager to see them move on from each other. And so I'm not saying unnaturally rush where they're going, but, you know, I hope they have their eye on what's next for both teams. Cause I talked to Jason Paul about this. There's a lot of pod booking Google Plus circle booking in AEW, to use a 10-15-year-old term there, in that there's too many people who just kind of book their own stuff off in the corner because they're in a clique, they're in a group, it's their social circle. And Jason Paul and I on the Play Show talked yesterday about our desire to see some of that get mixed up. It's part of why I don't want Hangman to just go back to the storyline with the Bucks and Kenny. For a variety of reasons, but one is I just want to see people work with other people and leadership in that company, the producers all the way up to Tony Khan, make sure that they're professionals and they make that happen. And I don't really care strongly if Billy goes back with his sons as heels or as faces, or they all end up as friends. I just want it to be a good and believable story that doesn't damage anyone along the way, but I'm not really set on there just being one way for that to happen.
Yeah. And I think that what you just said there is the biggest thing, is that this feels like a intermediate feud to get to the pay-per-view after they have this match. I thought it was going to be announced for next week, but I guess, you know, it'll be one more beat before we get to the match, I would hope. But I guess this could also be the pay-per-view match, which I think certainly would put it as you know, the ninth most important match on a 13-match card or whatever it's going to be, which is not,
yeah.
Is not where you want the tag titles to be, in my opinion. So that is a bigger issue. And, yeah, the story could work out. It could be good in hindsight. But it feels like this has been happening for – this story itself has been happening a long time. And, yeah, that the pod booking is a good way to look at it. And, you know, Cody started it with his Codyverse, and it's been a long time since we said that here on the show. But, you know, it's everyone's got their own verse now, and I don't think that works tremendously well. And, you know, I don't have an answer on who that tag team opponent could be, but getting out of this I think would be the best – option. But you know, it's a kind of the trajectory of every tag team the last, you know, three or four tag team champions. They start out pretty hot and then they cool off, and then you get to kind of this middling stuff, and then they're going to lose the title to the next hot team, and we'll see where that goes. But it just feels like there's no next hot team up ready to go, so I think that could be a problem for the division for sure.
Yep. All right, we'll go to Matt in Queens next. Hey, Wade and Tyler, I thought it was a good Dynamite overall, an improvement from last week, which felt underwhelming. The family therapy segment was more sincere and less silly than I expected. I found the latest wrinkles in the MJF-Danielson rivalry compelling. I like the unhinged place where MJF is taking Brian. I appreciate the video package and commentary introducing Timothy Thatcher, and like that AEW has been incorporating more video packages and pre-tapes, and hope that trend continues. The Jay Briscoe tribute match felt really special. You could feel the energy and emotion of the wrestlers and the crowd coming through the screen. And Excalibur and the ROH announce team did an excellent job. Everything about the performance and presentation was heartfelt, thoughtful, and dare I say, classy, at least as much as pro wrestling can ever hope to be. I continue to enjoy the chemistry of the AEW broadcast team. The announcers have a great rapport, with interactions feeling truly organic. While I could do without Excalibur's micro machine commercial style rundowns of the card, I'm a big fan of the looser, underproduced feel at the desk overall. Thanks, fellas, and for anyone listening who's on the fence, go VIP. P.S., I agree with Wade that we need to get a camera outside the venue to show fans arriving. Do we need to start a crowdfunding campaign to get AEW a GoPro? Thanks, Matt in Queens. So we hit a few things there. You mentioned, you know, a lot of things we've already talked about. But how about the chemistry at the current announce team with Taz in there in place of Jim Ross and Shivani and Excalibur bouncing off each other?
Yeah, I think it's great. It's you know, not a long history here, but I think it's the best announcing that AEW's had. Obviously, if you even look at that very first pay-per-view where Marvez and Jim Ross and Excalibur, I believe, was the three-man team. You know, from that to what was going for a long time on Dynamite with Ross and Tony and Excalibur, I think this is the best version of it. It's Taz brings a perfect note of seriousness and can be funny and kind of grounds Tony and lifts Excalibur, I guess, from the absolute seriousness. So he's a good catalyst for both of them to get into a better zone and be better commentators in different directions. But yeah, I think it works really well. They all have good chemistry, and I'm not, you know, I think like most people, not pro three-man booth all the time, but they're a pretty good three-man booth. And, you know, when, you know, like when Rampage started, for example, I would have on that podcast talking about Rampage, I would have a weekly segment talking about the announce team because there were four or five people every match. And, you know, we're not talking about the announce team on a regular basis. And I think that is a good measure of if it's a good announce team, you're not talking about them. And that they're like referees in a sporting event, right? If you're not talking about that, then they're doing a good job.
Yes. Yep. He also brought up the MJF Danielson, you know, the built. I didn't talk as much about the MJF promo, but I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I like the serious MJF. I like soft talking versus overmodulating. There was still an edge to it. You know, he said, you know, his pronunciation of Takeshita, he says, you know, I still like it. And if you don't, there's no accounting for taste. And, you know, we talked about taking Danielson to a dark place mentally, not just physically. Thought there was a lot there. And, you know, that's the kind of promo that I think MJF excels at. And I think it has the biggest benefit and positive to the wrestling show, his character, his opponent, and selling tickets. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, the sit-down promo specifically was incredible. And I think the thing that it does for me is it shows pretty plainly, especially if you watch any amount of MJF and have seen his arc, it really gives a window, and I think this is on purpose, to the insecurity that the MJF character feels at all times, and that's why he says he's better than you, and you know it. His whole character is, you know, he's talked about it with everything with Regal when he was a kid and being bullied and how he, you know, was told he wouldn't make it in wrestling, et cetera. Like, all those insecurities are still there, and he just puts a front of the MJF character and him sitting down talking about this, talking about how important that title is to him and how it validates every single thing that he says he is. And if he loses that, he won't be, you know, that character. And all that, the vulnerability also is the other side of that coin, is he's dangerous because he'll do anything to protect that. And it's so much more powerful than, you know, calling people lard asses and saying that the women in that city are easy, et cetera, which is, you know, fine to do for cheap heat on occasion. But this type of character is a well thought out, fully realized heel that, you know, is like any villain, right? Is a scared little kid somewhere deep down inside, and that's why they're the way they are. So I think that works really well. I didn't love it juxtaposed to the standard MJF character we saw just before that, with, you know, coming out and then getting chased off by Takeshita when he had a beaten down Danielson and you know, it was 2-on-1 essentially, and he still ran off. So that's a slight note, but the sit down segment I thought was spot on and really good heel work.
And I think MJF, you know, maybe there's an overcompensation or a concern that if he shows fight and stands up in a situation slightly favorable to him, that fans will cheer him. And so, you know, the idea is run from anything that isn't just an unfair fight, or where in his mind, you know, the way his character is, there's big money on the line and a big title at stake. And that's when I make my money. I don't make my money fighting somebody who runs in the middle of a post-match. So, you know, you can make that case too. All right. Well, we've got some callers calling up here. We'll go first to Jesse. Calling us, Jesse, appreciate you calling. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade, sorry. Had to unmute right there.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah
so you were at the show tonight, right? Yeah.
Yes, we're just now leaving.
I guess I'll just ask you, what was the emotion in the building tonight? For the final segment of Dynamite, just kind of take us into the building and talk about that, and then we'll move on to you know, just more typical Dynamite and Rampage conversation.
Yeah, so whenever Jay Lethal first came out, like, the crowd just went silent, because you could tell during the commercial break they started off with telling us, you know, the next match is the main event. When Jay Lethal came in, it was just outstanding, like, crowd noise and everything. Everybody was really into it. And then they aired the Jay Briscoe video. I don't know, did it air that on TV?
Yes.
Okay. So they showed that tribute video about 2 or 3 times throughout the night. So we was all already, like, they was not a single, you could hear a pin drop how quiet everything got. And then as soon as Mark came out, like, you could tell the crowd was just connected with every moment. That I've been to about 4 or 5 different wrestling shows, but that was the one match that everybody's been the most connected to. They was just cheering for everything Mark did, and you could just tell, like, how emotional it was there in the building. There was signs everywhere. Everybody was just – that's the most I've saw somebody connected to a match.
Wow. Yeah, I don't even – I'm not even quite sure what to well, to follow up on. I mean, that's a really good description. Tyler, jump in if you want to ask more about the Briscoe segment. You can. I mean, we talked a lot at the top of the show about it. But if you want to talk about other aspects of the show, then with Jesse, please do that.
Yeah, so the show went off air for us as Mark was kind of backing up and walking back towards that crowd of people. I think got hugged by Tony Khan, et cetera. Was there, you know, anything else that – you know, the rest of us should know that happened? Was there any words spoken, or did it, you know, did everyone walk off and they kind of changed the mat and went to Rampage, or was there any sort of, you know, dark promo, I guess, if you will, in between?
Now, the last thing, I don't know when it really cut off for TV for everybody, but whenever it came to us seeing it, you know, Mark walks up, he's hugging Tony and everything, and then Mark turns around with both the ROH tag team titles and just holds them up. But then after that, it's pretty much just him walking around hugging a couple of the Ring of Honor guys. I know I saw the Young Bucks there, Adam Cole. You know, they was just really just hugging, and then it cut straight to just getting set up for Rampage.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, like you said, it felt like all the crowd, would you say, you know, 100% people knew the scope of it. Would you say, if you had to guess, like just people around you, had people around you seen a Briscoe's match before? Did they know Mark Briscoe, or is this kind of the first time that they had seen Mark in action? If you had to guess.
Now, if I had to guess, I would say that pretty much the whole crowd knew, at least in my section, knew about the Briscoes, because whenever we got there, there was a couple people talking about it. There was a couple signs here and there. But then about halfway through the shows when we saw the first promo for Jay Briscoe, and as soon as his face just lit up on the screen, the whole crowd went wild. Like, it just, you could tell, like, they knew who it was. It wasn't just some random, you know, some event that they just showed up for, and, you know, he happened to be memorialized for him.
Very good. Wade, back to you.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the broader show and who. First of all, how full was the building? And have you attended AEW before, and how did the crowd compare?
Now, I've attended AEW one other time, and that was the fourth show in Charleston when SCU won the tag team titles. But as far as that, the crowd there at RUP was about, I would say, 80% full of what they were selling. The top section was tarped off. And there was like one or two sections, hard camera side, that really didn't sell much. But, you know, me, I went with a couple buddies from college, and we got tickets literally the day before because we knew they would have plenty left.
And so how did the crowd respond to the stars, and who came across as the bigger stars on this show? And was there any response that surprised you on the high or low end?
Now, one thing that really surprised me was Ruby Soho. Now, her reaction, I really didn't expect it. I don't know if it was just Toni Storm just didn't come off as popular as I would have expected, but as soon as Ruby's music hit, everybody in my section at least stood up and was going crazy for her. Let's see, some other guys, you know, of course, Chris Jericho, everybody was feeding in him. And surprisingly, Sammy Guevara, he, whenever he first came out and he was, like, posing or, you know, doing his little shtick, everybody came across really good there, but then they really turned at him towards the end.
Yeah, interesting. So, what else? Go ahead. Yep. Get more on that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was going to say, like, I was trying to keep up with who I thought was getting the best reaction, and pretty much everybody, I guess, where it was their first time here, everybody was really getting a good reaction. But surprisingly, the crowd lit up whenever it was for a Rampage. So I don't know if you want to do Rampage spoilers of one of the matches. I know we'll get to that later, but I didn't. It's just somebody that was on the show.
Yeah, let's just finish. Well, let's finish Dynamite talk and then kind of give people a warning, just in case there's some people who really do want to save Rampage and just hit the best word moment, but don't want to miss out on Dynamite talk.
Okay, I understand. And whenever, let's see, MJF, he came off really well whenever he first walked out. Like, there was no music, but as soon as he walked out, the crowd went crazy. Then he really, you know, turned them against him. And I'm trying to see, I wrote down some notes. Hook, his reaction, it may have seemed good when he first came out, but it kind of died down throughout the match. Jungle Boy had a really good reaction with the crowd. I could tell that, like, everybody was into him. Every time he would get the tag, everybody would be with him.
Yeah, interesting. Tyler, is there anything else from Dynamite you specifically want to ask Jesse?
Yes, I'm curious how the first match, you know, you talked about Jericho and Sammy, I'm the action Andretti character. Did it feel like the crowd was into him, not into him? Was it more for Ricky Starks, or was, you know, was there any, I guess, how would you judge his, you know, him being in AEW now for a month? Did his reaction feel like he's another guy, or he has potential to be a star down the line based on how the crowd felt about him?
Okay, so that is actually one thing I had wrote down in my notes, but I'm trying to get out of the arena, so I didn't get to that one. But, yeah, whenever the guys that I went with my mom and two old roommates. They really aren't that big into wrestling, but they just wanted to tag along with me where it was such a long drive to get here. And during that first match, both of them reached over to me and was asking me who Action was. Like, they said, this guy's really standing out to me. Like, that was one thing, and the people in front of me, a lot of them, I heard a lot of people asking. You could tell some people haven't been to a show before or may have not have watched it, maybe just coming along. But Action really caught the eye, surprisingly more than Ricky did with a lot of people that was in my section.
Yeah, we have an email on Ricky Starks we'll get to later in that tag match. But that's interesting, you know, the conveyance of that. Go ahead, Tyler.
No, that was it. I think I'll probably ask that question every time I'm on for a couple of weeks now. I think he's very interesting. I think Action Andretti could be a hardcore fan, maybe don't have as much of a good opinion of him, and people that just see him might be more attracted to him. That's kind of why I asked that, and that was interesting data point. But we can go to Rampage if you want, Wade.
Yeah, so go ahead, Jesse. Talk about Rampage, and we've given our listeners a warning to fast-forward a couple minutes if they want to watch Friday.
Okay, so with Rampage, we only stay for three matches. We kind of have a 2.5-hour drive back, so we wanted to get out on the road. But surprisingly, as soon as the first match was over, which was Hangman and Wheeler Yuta, so Hangman came off as a star. You could tell from the first promo during Dynamite, everybody cheered as soon as they saw him, but the crowd went silent because they was just listening to every word he was saying. And something weird with the dynamic. Did you feel like the dynamic with him during the first promo during Dynamite, I mean, like his segment, did you feel something was off the way he was, like, just saying he wanted to knock out Moxley in Dayton?
What do you mean something was off? I guess I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, sorry about that. I just feel like it doesn't fit the character. Like, last week he was kind of hesitant about it, but this week it seems like he was actually, you know, now he's trying to embrace, yeah, I did knock him out. It feels like this is,
I don't know. I guess what you mean. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up on your own, because we brought that up earlier, and Javier Machado joined us and touched on that too. Tyler, anything you kind of want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, my opinion was I like that the Hangman character is at least not in the, you know, no Dark Order and no kind of emotional, anxious stuff. It was more straightforward, and it definitely was a change from last week. But I think, you know, depending how this match went, I'm very curious if it was, you know, I would guess a hard-hitting brawl more so than a match. But, again, curious how that actually went. It could be a change in his character being more serious, and maybe a sign of him not being kind of the goofy fourth guy in the Elite, which I think would be a positive sign long-term for him. But I'm curious how the match went.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
So
yeah.
The match turned out better, like a more stiff match for Hangman, which is what I really prefer when it comes to Hangman, because I like a more serious Hangman, you know, fighting from the bottom. So at the end of the match, he hits his buckshot lariat, and instead of going to the pin, he steps over Wheeler's body. The camera zooms in, and you can tell, like, he's going through something. So then he picks up Yuta and hits Moxley's, what is it, the Death Valley driver to finish him off. But you could tell just, like, it wasn't just he wanted to win the match. It's he wanted to send the message and show that he's changed.
Okay.
So yeah. That was an interesting aspect on that.
Yeah, interesting. Yep. Yeah, keep going. Any other thoughts on Rampage?
So, yeah, one of the things that surprised me, this match was not advertised in the building for Rampage, but all the lights went off, the crowd went silent because we didn't know who was going to come out. And then, surprisingly, My World hit, and Jeff Jarrett came out, and that was the loudest pop we had, and I knew you would love hearing that, Wade.
That's hilarious. I mean, that's not a shock. That's sort of his territory, and he's a TV star for decades.
Yeah, so that was one thing that I checked off my list. I've always wanted to watch Jeff fight, and something that I wanted to go bring back up from Dynamite. I completely forgot about that. Sorry, like I said, it's my first time doing one of these, so I was like just trying to get the notes together, and it was best. But Bryan Danielson, when he came out, you could tell it was just a different star. It wasn't as big as, like, the Jeff Jarrett say we was. Like, Jeff Jarrett definitely had more of a pop, but the crowd was more into everything Bryan was doing. So, like, it actually felt good seeing him, because last time I went to Rupp for a show, it was a WWE show. I think it was Raw in 2019, but it came off like one of the reactions that with that event.
Interesting. Jesse, anything else you want to read from your notes from Rampage or your just kind of overall thoughts on the whole show?
Overall, I think it was a decent show. I was really disappointed because the theme that it seemed like everybody wanted to see was the Acclaimed, and that's just like there was scissor signs everywhere.
Wow.
And whenever the Family Therapy came on, yeah, everybody was cheering for it. But as soon as we realized, you know, when the Gun Club stood up and they pointed out the titles, I think the crowd kind of thought that match was going to happen at the Rampage tapings. And then when they announced that it wasn't, then, like, a lot of the crowd just, you could hear boos in the crowd.
Oh, wow. That's interesting how much, you know, there's people who just want to be eyewitness to that and to their act.
Yeah, so that was definitely the biggest surprise, was that they wasn't there for, like, you know, everybody in the crowd seemed to want that. The only other signs I really saw, because I was trying to look for that, was there was a couple Jay Briscoe signs, a couple, you know, the scissor signs, and then I think I saw just MJF, but in all there wasn't many signs, but the signs they were, it seemed like they were mostly the Acclaimed. And I also checked the merchandise stand, too. The shirts they were selling were just the regular AEW tour shirt, a new Adam Cole shirt, and the Acclaimed shirt. So there wasn't many options there.
Okay, good. Well, Jesse, for someone who hasn't known before, you did a great job. I really appreciate you calling us up after the show.
No problem. And sorry about that, Wade. Like I said, this is my first time. I was really nervous to get on here, but I'm looking forward. I'll be calling in soon again.
It'd be great to hear from you, even when you're not attending shows, and just reacting to the show. Thanks, Jesse. Have a good night.
All right, you too. See you guys.
Yeah. All right, so we've got both Donald and James who have called in, who also attended. I'm going to take them in the order that they called, and go to Donald next. Donald, thanks so much for calling. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So whereabouts did you sit? What perspective did you have on the show?
Where did I sit? I was in section 18, kind of upwards. Everything up top was tarped off, of course, but like row T, kind of like in the middle.
Yeah, okay. And so talk about the kind of the vibe in the building. Had you been to an AEW show before?
This is actually my first AEW event. My wife's uncle actually works for the company. He does like the lighting and sets up, you know, for the show. And I had other opportunities, but this was kind of perfect because Lexington is just exactly an hour away from where I live, so it was perfect tonight.
That's great. So as a first timer, have you've been to WWE shows or other shows, I presume?
Oh, yes, yes. I've been to several WWE shows in the past. Nothing recently, but I have been to those shows as well.
Yeah, so one of the things I like to ask people, especially if it's, I mean, if they've been to multiple AEW shows, I can ask a variation of the question. But as a first-time AEW show, did it feel different to you in a major arena than going to a WWE event? And if so, what was different about it? The vibe, the crowd, the buzz, whatever.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different vibe. It's more, there were kids there, but it wasn't like a WWE show where there's like a ton of kids, like with Cena shirts and, you know, Bloodline t-shirts, you know. This was like, it felt like it's like more for like the wrestling, purist, like a wrestling fan, you know, like it has that vibe. If you're there at a show like that, then you're like a diehard wrestling fan.
Yeah, yeah. So, just what's your impression of the Jay Briscoe tribute, and just kind of describe the mood in the building and what the experience was like to be part of that.
I got chills when that they played that segment at the start. Well, it was sort of at the start of the show. Got chills, man. It was kind of silent in our section. My daughter was sitting beside me, and she looked at me and she said, "Did he die?" Because, you know, it was kind of kind of somber, you know, pretty. You know, the footage of him dancing with his daughter, you know, man, just very touching. It was very, you know, just you really felt that when you were sitting there, even though it was on the screen, it was pretty emotional, man.
Yeah. Was the reaction to the actual wrestling with Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe different than the other matches? And I think the obvious answer is yes. So I guess I should phrase it. In what way did it feel different? And did it eventually break away from this is a tribute match and everyone's emotional to just sort of getting into it like it's a fight and a regular match before it returned to, you know, the state of remembering Jay Briscoe? Or, yeah, just kind of talk about that. Because I would think it would be difficult but also possible that you'd just get pulled into the fight and kind of lose the context if things got rolling.
I can't really answer that because I didn't see that match, unfortunately. I left right at the end of the Ruby Soho and Toni Storm match. So didn't see that, unfortunately. Yep.
Yep, no problem then. So talk about what the highs and lows were of the rest of Dynamite. Matches, interviews, things on the big screen. What stood out to you that really worked with you and also with the crowd?
Yeah, so I got there pretty early, and it was, you know, there was Top Flight, they were pretty big, pretty over. Of course, that's, you know, Dark Elevation. So, but the start of Dynamite was, it was awesome. Tony Khan coming out there, you know, greeting everyone like he does at the start of the show. The highs, two people that got some of the biggest pops, man, of course, you know, there'd be no surprise. Jericho, of course, everyone stood up and was singing the song, theme song. I mean, just word for word, man. Someone who got maybe a bigger or close to that, Darby Allin. He got a huge pop. Huge.
I'm not surprised by that. That's been the thing for him for a long time. Is getting, you know, big pops. He's more popular than sometimes his push. Although he's getting a nice push now, but there are times where he hasn't been. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So, some of the highs were of course, the matches. as far as the – sometimes it could – what I noticed, it kind of slowed down a little bit with the during, like, Jungle Hook match kind of. You know, everyone was into it. But, like, midway through the match, it was a little – I'm not saying stagnant, but just wasn't really, really, really connecting. You didn't feel that it was connecting with the crowd about midway through that match. And it was kind of like – you could tell everyone's, like, you know, kind of – just waiting, like, all right, we're, you know, waiting for the next thing. You know, that's, if I say that's a low, that would be one thing. You kind of get caught up in those matches, and you're like, there's a point where you're like, all right, so what's next, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's bound to happen. Tyler, is there anything else you want to jump in and ask Donald?
Yeah, I was curious, since you were there through the women's match, how was the overall crowd reception to Britt Baker coming out? You know, she was, I assume, announced to you guys that she was not wrestling like she was supposed to. So, but her coming out, her music hitting, and that being the cause of that match was, well, how was the crowd response? Was it universally cheered, universally booed, or kind of a mix on her character after doing that?
She got universally cheered, man. As soon as her music popped, it was like everyone stood up and did the DMD thing, you know, in the air. she's pretty over, man. I mean, I guess she's still a heel, but she got a face pop. Seriously, she could definitely be go on a face run, I think.
Yeah, that's something for them to figure out, Tyler.
Yeah, well, that's why I think this was like a little bit of that. We haven't talked about that yet, so I wanted to bring it up a little bit. But I think that was a little dip of the toe in the water, and I think that a universal reaction would be a positive answer on what to do with her and her character. But we'll see. And then the only other question I had was, during that Darby match, there was the lights went out, and, you know, the House of Black was on the ramp, and Sting and Ortiz attacked. How was your reaction, the crowd reaction to that? It was a little muddled for me personally, but how was that received in the crowd?
Muddled in person, too, because it was like, we're like, the people around me were like looking at each other like, who was that? Like, at first I thought it was Wheeler Yuta, and I was like, who was it? It was kind of, especially without, you know, when you're there live, without the commentary, you know, you're just kind of left to kind of guess who it was. But I've seen a few people looking at each other like, hey, who was that? You know, that was a low point.
Wade, back to you.
Yeah, so Donald, anything else that you want to share with us from the your first AEW experience? What else jumped out?
Overall, I mean, it was an awesome experience. My first time being there, it was a different vibe, as I mentioned earlier. Different vibe. Seemed like it was more of the wrestling purist fans there. Well, you could just tell by their shirts. I saw a couple of Briscoe T-shirts. And, you know, some guys wearing the bandana around their neck, you know. the vibe is good. They got a good thing going with the live shows, man. They really interact with you, especially like during like the commercial break. The ring announcer, he was calling out the sections. He's like, hey, section 11. And, you know, he's like getting people hyped, and, It was very interactive, man. It wasn't like you're just sitting there during the commercial break, but it was just like, he's like, hey, we got 30 seconds left. Section 15, you know, let me hear you. You know, just kind of like hyping up the people in the crowd, keeping you awake, you know. It was good vibes, man.
Awesome. Donald, thanks for calling up and sharing your first AEW experience with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Long-time listener, man.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Call anytime, by the way.
All right. Thanks. All right. Yep, thank you.
All right, well, now I'll go to James, our third on-site correspondent in a row who attended tonight. James, thanks for holding, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Wade, for having me.
Absolutely. So we talked to a couple of people already about the show, I think it's good to get multiple perspectives on this, and I'll start with the emotions in the building for the Jay Briscoe segment, what it felt like for you to be there, and kind of just take us there. Describe the emotions in the building.
Sure. It was really kind of awe-inspiring, actually. The crowd was super into it. They played the tribute video twice. So early on, they played all the way through the commercial break. They played it for us. And then during the main event, when Jay Lethal came out, he was actually tearing up and crying during the commercial break. So they were trying to console him in the ring a little bit. And then the match was fantastic. I mean, Mark Briscoe did a fantastic job, which I know had to be extremely hard given the fact that the brothers just died. But it was a great match. Yeah. You had a table spot. You had, you know, all the good stuff. And it was really good. The crowd was really into it. Lots of Briscoe chants, lots of Reach to the Sky chants. I mean, even Jay Lethal got some chants. So it was a great match.
So let's did you stay for Rampage?
Yes, stayed for all of it.
Yeah. Yep, so we'll cover that in a minute. I thought I want to pace myself as far as that goes. So what, besides the Jay Briscoe tribute match, what do you think is going to stick with you? What's going to stand out as the top memory from attending AEW? And preface, too, by telling me if you've been to AEW live events before.
Sure. Well, I'll start with that. No, I've not been to a live event. I'm from Louisville, so the closest event to us had been Cincinnati or Nashville, and that's kind of tough to pull off during the week. So this Lexington was actually the closest opportunity for me and my friend to go to. I haven't been to a live show since the 90s, so I was really excited to go and have enjoyed the AEW product. But I have to tell you, from an experience perspective, it was awesome to be there, but I left feeling unfulfilled. I go expecting to see all the big names, right? I mean, the card wasn't bad, but you get a run-in from MJF. You don't see any of the other top guys. But yet during the tribute section, they all come out. So, I mean, they're there, but you don't get them. So here I've paid, you know, pretty good money for these tickets in Section 15, Row A, and all I really get is Darby Allin, who I don't like, Bryan Danielson, who I do like. So it was kind of like, really, guys, it felt like it was a throwaway show, so to speak. It didn't advance any storylines. I didn't feel more compelled to buy the pay-per-view. I mean, the MJF story advanced, but the rest of them were kind of like, I just don't get it. So, I mean, would I go back? Absolutely. It was fun. I enjoyed it, but I just left unfulfilled.
Well, they've left you wanting more, but maybe too much.
Yeah, well, didn't give us much at all.
Yeah, it's really, you know, we can kind of get wrapped up in, you know, what they did to Ford storylines and the matches that they had, the match quality and the emotions of the Dave Briscoe segment. But that's why, you know, these on-site correspondent calls are so interesting, because it's like we can watch it at home and not think about it through the lens of you in the building going, I paid money, this is my chance to see them in person, and they just stood on the stage but never came out and actually did what I know of them and why I'm fans of theirs, and we didn't get that. And, you know, something AEW and Tony Khan should be cognizant of, you know, when it comes to the live show experience.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm a fan of AEW. I prefer them over the WWE stuff. And I was telling my buddy, you know, Tony Khan comes out and thanks everybody for being there, and you would never in a million years see Vince McMahon come out and do that. So I at least felt like he appreciated me spending my money. But then I'm like, okay, well, you know, where's a, you know, the big star like Samoa Joe? Why didn't he come out? I mean, we got a promo from him on the screen, but it would have been great to see him. Or even the Bucks, for that matter. They were there. You know, they come out on stage for the tribute. Maybe a run-in, something. I don't know. Give me something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Tyler, anything you want to bring up with James about Dynamite before we move on to Rampage?
I mean, I've asked other people, but I'm just curious your thoughts on the crowd reaction to both Action Andretti tonight and Britt Baker. They're very interesting characters at this time to me. So I'm curious your thoughts and how the crowd reacted.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll start with the Britt Baker. She got a larger pop than either Toni Storm or Ruby Soho. The match was flat. And then Britt Baker comes out and everybody cheers. So, you know, not to throw shade on Toni Storm or Ruby Soho, they really worked hard, but the match is just kind of dull. So when Britt comes out, everybody cheers. So I think that, as you said earlier, they're dipping their toe in the water on do they turn her face, which I would say yes, just based off the crowd reaction. I think that's an easy turn.
Yeah, I think they kind of got to, as we said, Tyler, they kind of got to figure out what they're going to do with her and take the inevitable crowd reaction into account, despite how she might otherwise want to portray her character.
Yeah.
Was there any point in the Dynamite matches where the crowd seemed to lose patience or lose interest, rightfully or wrongfully, in your view?
Well, I would say the women's match, the crowd did get a little restless. I mean, there was, some interest, but not a great deal. That was the biggest kind of low point. The crowd started off hot, right? We got there early, got in our seats about 6:30 before dark started. The normal woo chants were going around the arena. Everybody was super into it. Dasha comes out. People are cheering. We had, even though the dark matches were kind of lackluster, I mean, they brought the intensity, and the crowd was very hot. The Darby Allin Buddy Matthews match was kind of so-so. But those were kind of the two low points as far as the action. The Bryan Danielson Brian Cage match was phenomenal. Crowd was into that start to finish.
What kind of response did Ricky Starks get?
He was over.
Yeah. Yep.
Crowd
a
lot into him. Action Andretti, kind of not so much. I mean, he had a couple of, I don't want to call them botches, but, I mean, there were kind of some missed spots. So, he's green, I guess, new. He's learning, but there were some opportunities that I think he missed. Sammy is a great heel. Everybody hates him. I mean, it was a lot of chants about Sammy sucks and you still suck, and that was pretty interesting.
So let's shift to Rampage to wrap up the conversation here, James. People have alert here, spoiler alert. If they don't want to know, they can fast forward a couple minutes in the show. But, yeah, just kind of run down what stood out to you on Rampage.
Sure. Adam Page, it sure feels like they're turning him heel, although slowly. The match was kind of lackluster. Guy behind us was heckling him the entire match, which was actually more interesting than the match itself. They did get pretty stiff towards the end, which got the crowd a little more into it. But, Wheeler Yuta, you get what you get when you watch him. Adam Page, stiff clotheslines, a lot of heel mannerisms on the outside, turning his back, standing over him. I mean, it was, full-on heel. So it wouldn't surprise me if they try to turn him or at least make him a tweener later. That's really stood out. Powerhouse Hobbs, squash match. I mean, it was Build the Monster. His gimmick with the book is kind of stupid. I don't understand that, but they're trying to rebuild him for sure. And then the main event, Jamie Hayter, the match was mediocre at best. There was a real excited fan there that had a sign made that said Hayter Raid. And Britt Baker actually went over and took the sign from him and was walking around holding it up around the ring. So she was really playing into that face role during that match. And then last thing, I know Donald had mentioned, or maybe the caller before had mentioned Jeff Jarrett. He got an insane pop. I mean, Jeff Jarrett was over. Satnam Singh, he's a big man. He did what big men do, right? He took a bunch of chops, no sell. Couple good moves. Danhausen, for some reason, is way over. It doesn't do much in the ring, but that was probably the highlight of Rampage was the Jeff Jarrett match.
Wow. Who did Jeff wrestle? Sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, who did Jeff Jarrett wrestle?
He was in that six-man tag against the Best Friends and Danhausen.
Got it. Okay, I was trying to fill that in. I want to go back to Dynamite just for a second, because I didn't ask anyone this, about how the crowd reacted during the family therapy session on the big screen. And then in a broader sense, did it feel like, I know you're disappointed in the star power of who was out there, but the pace of the show, did it feel like there were too many video packages, too much stuff not happening in the ring? So first, the family therapy thing.
Sure. No, the crowd was into it, watching it on the big screen. So, I mean, it was a lot of oohs and ahs. I mean, you didn't get the normal Max Caster rap or anything along those lines, but that storyline kind of moved grudgingly forward. So you can see where they're likely going to go with that in a match at the pay-per-view. So that was pretty interesting. As far as the pacing of the show, I will say they only had really two video packages, and one was the family therapy, and the other was Samoa Joe, who interrupted Tony Schiavone saying like six words in the ring. So you got a lot of action. I mean, they packed it with action. It just, the action was not from the stars people really wanted to see. And the groan, I guess, that came out of our section there in Section 15 when they showed Dynamite for next week with Moxley and, you know, all the stars are next week in Dayton, you know, but here we are in Lexington and we're getting two of them. So, sorry, I'm just a little bitter about that.
Yep, no problem. Tyler, any closing words, any closing questions for James here?
I don't think so, but I'll let you know if I think of any in the last second.
Okay. Yeah, no, I got nothing else. I got nothing else, James. Anything else you want to add from your experience tonight before we move on here?
No, it was a fun time. It felt like a long time, but it was enjoyable. The crowd around you really made it, you know, a memorable event. And then finally getting to see the Briscoe on, you know, AEW TV was a good thing, and it was actually a great match. So I appreciate the opportunity to call in. I listen to your show, and thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, James, so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Excellent. If you want to be an on-site correspondent on a future episode, it's easy. Just send an email to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And let us know what show you're going to, what the date in the city is. In fact, it's good if you put the city in the subject line. Makes it easier to stay organized with the emails that come in. And I'll be in touch, and we can arrange to have you on the show and do what James and Jesse and Donald did in terms of sharing their in-person perspective. All right, Tyler, let's wrap up with a couple emails and then any stray thoughts that we have on things that weren't covered with all the kind of different format for today's show than usual. First up, Jay from New York says, I just watched the Danielson Cage match and I had a thought. Why is MJF being made into a coward heel? Cage is holding Danielson down, but one man running out made MJF turn and scurry away. Why not attack Takeshita? Cage being there gives MJF a numbers advantage and Danielson was down. By the way, why bother with the complicated sequence of placing the chair on Danielson's arm and then climbing on the ropes? Hand the chair to the rather large guy standing there and tell him to smash Danielson's arm with it seven or eight times. I think that would have solved MJF's problems. MJF's character is supposed to be so smart and calculating, but right now he's coming across as the exact opposite. Thanks and take care. So another comment about MJF scurrying away. The idea of why not just smash his arm seven, eight times, it's always present in pro wrestling. Like watch UFC for like 3 hours and then flip on a wrestling match. Wrestling makes no sense if you start thinking in that way. There's things you shouldn't do. Like I would argue Ricky Starks should not walk the top rope, slowly strut and pose for the camera when it's obvious that Jericho is not in peril. And all Chris Jericho has to do is either yank on his arm or shove him. And so that's a move you got to do quickly, and you have to do it when your opponent is disoriented. And that's a lost art. You know, I don't know how good the spoiler Don Jardine was at doing it quickly and not making the whole thing look ridiculous. But Ricky was sort of the video, what he did tonight would be the video I would show a locker room full of young wrestlers of how not to do the top rope walk because of how bad it makes not the opponent look, but the concept of worked pro wrestling matches. It's cool that he can do it. It just needs to be done in a different way. Same thing with like the Alberto Del Rio thing where the guy has to, you know, do a half sit up while hanging upside down and wait for him to posture for the crowd before he hits them. Or when people scurry into position or scoot, I should say, into position for a top rope move. So they're at a perfect 45 degree angle so they can be hit spot on. And don't get me started on standing with your arms extended to get to when someone's diving at you from the ring. So there's things that can be improved upon, but the concept that why did you do that move with a chair going to the top rope instead of continuing to bash somebody over and over with a chair, you can say that about a lot of things in wrestling, Tyler. And I you know, we just kind of have to, you know, stipulate to the lack of urgency and simplicity when it comes to how matches go.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I would say even a wrestling example is Okada this past week at the Wrestle Kingdom Night 2, where he got kicked in the face and it turned into a real fight really quick. Shows you all the you know, what wrestling is versus a real fight. So if you don't even have to go to UFC to see the differences there. But yeah, I mean, you know, I have some of the same issues I brought up earlier with the MJF character. I think there's just a couple things you could do. You know, it's MJF handing more money to Prince Nana and then Brian Cage doing exactly what he did, Kester running down, saving him, and then it makes sense because there's one guy and then a second guy comes and MJF doesn't have to get his hands dirty. He, you know, the goal was for him to have the guy get beat up and he doesn't have to run away. So there's just like little edits you could do to, I think, be more in line with the MJF character. But yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, contrivances in wrestling is definitely to get past it is helps me mentally enjoy it more than focusing on stuff like that. But that's just me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there anything else in his email? Just the MJF kind of scurrying away rather than being a tough guy. Do you think that fits his persona right now, his character, especially when you take into, and this is a leading question in a way, but when you take into account the idea that I think he's very concerned about being clever and entertaining and a badass and getting cheered. And I think part of why he might be faulting on the side of talk a tough game but run away is to not start getting cheered again.
Yeah, I just think like there's edits you could do to do essentially this exact same format that we saw tonight. And he could be the puppet master of it, but not put himself in a position to scurry away, and he could kind of thread the needle a little more so. But, you know, that's a minor note, I would say, overall on the character. I still have enjoyed the change from the very beginning of this feud where he laid out, hey, you're going to have an MJF feud with me, Danielson. I think he's taken notes somewhere and has improved upon the heel character tremendously in the last 3 weeks. So,
yep. All right. Let's see. Josh in Florida emailed and said, any momentum Ricky Starks had seems to be gone. Did Tony Khan bury him by pairing him with Action Andretti? Now, the last on-site correspondent asked specifically about that. He said, oh, you know, Ricky was really over. The crowd is chanting for Ricky. I don't think teaming him with Action Andretti is in and of itself burying him. And I think this is kind of, if you go back 3-4 weeks, this is where you would expect Ricky's feud to be with Jericho at this point, you know, just, you know, working with other wrestlers who are associated with Jericho and having a buddy to team with to go after Jericho, when in this case, Guevara. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I think it's still overall, especially if Ricky beats Jericho again or you know, wins a big match at a pay-per-view over Jericho. He's got, you know, two big wins. I think all is well that ends well. The only concern I would have on that whole front is, you know, if you look at who Jericho has feuded with, you know, in recent history, I think Orange Cassidy, I think Claudio Castagnoli, and I don't know if either of them were better for it at the end, even though they won the feud. So that's a bit of a concern, but I think there's much more upside in Ricky Starks than either of them within AEW as being a top single star too. So that's all part of the equation. But, you know, I think it's just Jericho's got a group, and if you're Ricky Starks, it would be weird if he's taking on all of them by himself and no one comes out to help him ever. That is also another quality of baby faces I don't really understand in wrestling, right? If it's done, is like, you know, you can have the lone wolf character, but it doesn't make much sense that you're a good guy, but everyone hates you in the back and they don't even come out and defend you for any reason. So
yeah,
I think it makes sense on more levels. It's just kind of a, you know, I even put in my report tonight, like, I don't love that this story is being extended to the pay-per-view as it seems. I'd rather Stark do something else, but you know, it is what it is. And it serves a bigger purpose than this episode of Dynamite for Starks in general. This is more the story between Sammy, Jericho, and Garcia, I thought, than a Ricky Stark story in this chapter.
Javier, let's see, did I cover this? Oh, no, I'm getting confused. Oh, yeah, I did read. I didn't mark this as answered, but I did read this. It was a longer one. Javier emailed, by the way, and said a friend of mine asked me which one was Jay and which one was Mark, and I told him Jay looks like he'll be the one that'll kill you. Mark looks like he'll he says you probably won't be able to read that. Yeah, you're right, Javier. I should have read that goal.
Good thing you stopped.
Also, how much do you enjoy Taz? People can use their imagination, and they're probably right. Also, how much do you enjoy Taz correcting his own grammar mid-commentary? I noticed that. I loved it. I'm just a fan of Taz's personality. You know, the tough guy, moody, you know, whatever, you know. And then, but he's also like, not insecure, but like not, I don't think self-deprecating is the right word, but willing to be sort of playful in contrast to that by going, oh yeah, even though I have this edge to my personality and this history and the business and I was this, you know, credible ECW world champion, I'm still a little concerned that people are going to judge my grammar. Like I do get a kick out of that. Tyler, we talked about the announcement yeah. earlier, but anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, it's a good defense mechanism. I know it well. I use it almost every day in my life. So Taz is smart there socially to use that. So, yeah, and I think Taz definitely also at least Hook presented it to him or whatever. But Taz was a big star of that Botchamania series on YouTube for a while, and I think he maybe didn't love that as much as you would think. So maybe he's doing that to curb that just a tiny bit too. But, you know, whatever. I think Taz is just probably a good dude, and, you know, self-deprecating is usually a good quality unless you do it too much. But, you know, I think it fits his jovial badass character that he is.
Yes. Like I'll be friendly, but if I meet you, but I also might not be friendly if I meet you, and you have to take that chance. Depending on the mood I'm in. So I'm kind of thinking about the rest of the show and anything that, that we didn't cover. The Ethan Page, Matt Hardy, Stokely situation. Tyler, where are you on this?
I mean, it's bad. Also, I'm not sure what context. I just feel like, you know, it's a story that, A, I don't care about as a viewer, but also, like, I've missed beats. And I know they're there, but it's probably one of the most poorly told stories on the, you know, on Dynamite / Rampage, maybe that and Swerve Strickland kind of, and Keith Lee not being on the show for weeks on end, it seems. So, you know, a fall for Ethan Page for where I thought he was on a better trajectory, but yeah, it's not going well for me, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And even in this match, like, I know he has the rights to Hardy and Cassidy, but it doesn't make sense. Like, the character of Hardy, like, I think he would fight back or lose on purpose so that Paige gets mad, and he would still contractually be obligated to, you know, do what he's doing, but he's not breaching contract. Like, telling that story is more interesting than him just being like a drone for Ethan Page. It's very strange.
Yeah. Yep. I almost, under other circumstances, might have led with what I want to end with, which is the lineup for next week. They announced matches for next week, and it includes Darby against Samoa Joe for the TNT title in a no-holds-barred match, Hangman against Moxley, and Danielson against Thatcher, and then, you know, a bit of a drop-off here, but Jamie Hayter against Emily Sakura, Powerhouse Hobbs, and the Acclaimed also. I don't know if they said Powerhouse in a match or just appearing, but the Acclaimed in action, so they'll be in a tag match. But that is a strong top three matches, Danielson Thatcher in the MGF Challenge Series, the Hangman Moxley rubber match, and then same with Darby and Samoa Joe for the TNT title and making it no holds barred. Looking at tonight's lineup, I mean, I don't really want to, you know, judge it just because the main event was so different than normal. And then Britt Baker had the injury and couldn't participate. But when you look at Ethan Page and Matt Hardy against Hook and Jungle Boy, and that's like the third or fourth marquee match, not counting the tribute match. I don't know. I mean, this lineup was you know, mid-road for Dynamite. But I think next week looks more impressive in terms of the top three. I'm curious for your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it fits the booking pattern for Dynamite on a lot of levels. Like first, I think Tony Khan really treats Dynamite kind of like NBA teams do during the regular season, right? Like on a back-to-back, usually that second night, if a team plays Friday and then they have to get on a plane and play Saturday, that's when a lot of the stars don't play that second game. And that's kind of how Dynamites are structured. Yeah. You know, you have the, you know, what, 3 weeks ago now was a huge show at the Forum. The week before that in Seattle was also a huge show. And, you know, you have kind of two maintenance shows after that. This is kind of the last big show before AEW builds to the pay-per-view, because none of this is really pay-per-view effective. So after this, you have everything that's going to build. You're going to build, you know, your 13 matches, and you're going to lay out 3 or 4 in each week, so they're going to feel newsworthy. So it just feels like that for me more than anything. And, you know, that's kind of the luck of the draw sometimes, and I don't think the city has anything to do with it per se, but yeah, just kind of that mentality. And I think that's the difference between, you know, events in a WWE, which have your big stars every week, versus AEW, which is, you know, give people time off and have them be able to put on good matches when you need them to, is kind of how I view it.
Yeah. Yep. So anything else in your notes before I wrap up here?
The only thing I have is you might have to talk to Eric Kroll before he hears this to let him know that Adam Page might be going heel, because I'm worried about him.
It wasn't a good week for Hangman Page in terms of feedback from everyone participating in the show who commented on him. All right. Very good. Tyler, thanks so much, everybody. Check out Tyler on our PW Torch YouTube channel. Just search PW Torch on YouTube, or youtube.com/PW Torch. Check out the content. And feel free to email us or call future shows, including this Friday after SmackDown. Thanks again, Tyler.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yep. And thanks to our listeners and callers. We'll talk to you next time.